The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Day 4 and hello Group D. In Kiev, Elmanda looking less composed than Beethoven's unfinished symphony, but Sheva has them singing in the Ukraine as host nations spring a Swedish surprise, while in Donetsk, just like back home, summer leaves the English disappointed. We review England's draw with France and other Monday business, and then we preview the long-awaited return of Group A, Russia-Poland, not much previous there then, and of course the Czechs and the Greeks, all of that and much, much more in Euro 2012 Football Daily.
Dig, 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 dig is what we like to do.
It ain't no trick to get rich quick.
If you dig, dig, dig with a shovel or a pick.
In a mine,
where a million diamonds shine.
Woo! Group D. And what a town this is, Donetsk, eh? So what, it's a mining town. The brochure said City of a Million Roses. It also mentioned the fact that Welsh industrialist called John James Hughes founded this place in 1870. How do you fancy that happening? Welsh industrialist out here in the middle of the steps. Paolo Bandini, is that you hi-hoing?
That is, yeah. I mean, I wasn't around in 1870, unfortunately. So
right. Or fortunately, yeah. Otherwise you'd be dead now.
That's true. I wouldn't be around to this podcast.
Yes. All right. Anyway, hi, Paolo.
Hi. Thanks for that input. Here. Not back in rainy London.
Right. Scott. Yeah, it is rainy, apparently. Scott Murray.
Hi, James.
You were all over that France-England thing.
Like a wet blanket.
Right. We'll talk to you more about that a little bit later on. And Paul Doyle, back for more.
Hi-ho.
Yes, exactly.
How are you?
I'm very well. And thanks. And it is off to work we go. Because just finished over in Kiev, a fantastic start to the tournament for co-host Ukraine. They laughed, they scoffed, but now they've got to sit back and take stock of a Shevchenko-led team that's sitting on top of Group D. Paolo Bandini.
Yeah, I mean, it was wonderful fairy tale stuff for the home supporters. Obviously, they'd just gone a goal behind to Sweden. Ibrahimovic scored, and you know, Ukraine had given as good as they got. It hadn't been a particularly eventful start to the game until Ibrahimovic scored, and then it really sort of picked up very quickly. And yeah, it's just two classic strikers' goals. Both times, well, the first time he just bullied Olof Mellberg, basically got in front of him and won the header. And the second time, another fantastic header, but this time taking advantage of the fact that Ibrahimovic certainly isn't a defender and didn't really know what he was doing at a corner. But yeah, fantastic goals.
Two classic performances from Shevchenko and a classic performance as well from Elmanda. Many would suggest on that big Swedish chance. They had a couple of big chances at the end, didn't they, Paul?
It's worth noting that Shevchenko's classic performance came in the wake of similarly excellent performances from Arshavin and Pavlyuchenko.
Right.
It's as if there's life beyond the Premier League.
Away with that notion.
But it's funny with Shevchenko in that people weren't even expecting him to start this game. A lot of people were saying he wasn't even going to play. So for him to sort of do that and then get to be the hero like that is fantastic.
We all had a bit of a cheap laugh at Andriy Shevchenko in the Euro 2012 preview thing. And, hats off to him, you know.
It's also worth mentioning, I think, that Ukraine fully deserved their win.
Right.
Just for their attitude as much as anything else. They just attacked with vim and verve, right, more or less from the start, but from the 10th or 15th minute. Whereas Sweden were very disappointing for most of the game. Zlatan showed flashes of brilliance, and I think did enough to quell suggestions that he's a big game bottler, not just his goal, obviously, but there were some touches of real class in there. And he's different to, for example, other big stars from relatively small nations. Cristiano Ronaldo, for example, who Portugal are bigger than Sweden, probably, but Cristiano Ronaldo tries to do absolutely everything on the pitch. Even Robbie
Stephen
Keane
Gerrard
for Ireland used to try and do everything. Whereas Zlatan certainly doesn't try to do everything. but he's content to wait until the ball comes to him. And then more often than not, he will produce something that's worth the wait.
There was a very enjoyable press conference with him this week where he was asked about his role, about, you know, him being the key man, everyone relying on him. And he said, no, I'm just part of the team. And then he had a little pause and he said, quite a big part of the team. Which I thought was funny. But, you know, Ibrahimovic, they've obviously pulled him back now into this withdrawn role, which is more like how he plays at Milan. I thought he did, you know, he did everything you could have asked from this game, and you can't blame him for what happened here, because if anyone else on his team really had contributed as much as he did, it might have been a different result. He hit the post, he scored a goal, he had one fantastic shot that got a good save out of Pjatov, and he also put Elmander through for what could have been an equaliser. So, you know, he did his job.
All right, let's get a couple of listeners' thoughts on this. Alter Ryan says, based on tonight's performance, will Ukraine do a Chelsea in this tournament? Jim Tav 1 says, who missed a trick on Shev being top scorer? And Ian Small asks, how much will Chelsea bid for Shevchenko next month? Straight swap for Torres. Yeah, interesting. If you fancy tweeting, then AC Jimbo, at AC Jimbo, that's one place to do it. Anyway, that was all great to see you. Less great, though, was that very scary man in the stands with the mask, Paolo. I know you were disconcerted by this.
Yeah, I'm just trying to pull it up right now because I was deeply disconcerted by it, as I think a lot of us were, and certainly...
I was just glad you saw it. You know, it's one of those things. Did anybody else see that?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people had that, and it obviously became a bit of a thing on Twitter, and a lot of people were confused.
Yes.
But I asked Twitter, and in that way that it occasionally comes up, Trump, someone told me it's a Fantomas mask, who is a 1970s character. Now, I am not familiar with it, but on Google, I had a little look, and it does look like this character had a familiar visage, slightly more green than the version we saw in the crowd. But it did look like that was probably the case.
Thanks for clearing that up. Nice one, Twitter. Well, anyway, listen, based on all of that, and based on that France-England spectacle that we saw earlier, how far can Ukraine go in this group? Could they get out of it? Can they even top it? Paul?
Probably not. I think they're more of a threat to France and England than Sweden are. Mm. And I'd still say France and England are probably favourites to get out of it. But Ukraine, with their attacking intent and the sharp marksmanship of Shevchenko, and Yarmolenko looked a very good player as well, then they certainly can punish any mistakes that, or any slackness that the others offer.
Yeah. I think it was sort of known before the tournament that their problem would be at the back, and that probably is still an area to be exposed. They're missing Chigrinsky for the tournament. They're missing their first choice keeper, Shavkovsky. They've got Pjatov in goal, looked distinctly iffy to me. So I think there's lots there to be exploited if a team can get on top of them. But it certainly, for England, I think, complicates things in as much as now, whatever happens, they're going to have Ukraine in their last game, and Ukraine will know that it's at least possible for them to go through whatever happens, even if they lose the intervening game. And you're going to have the middle game of Sweden. Sweden knowing they absolutely have to get something or it's all over for them. So it's sort of set up now that England have got the worst of both worlds. You know that everyone's going to have something to play for.
I see what you mean. Well, let's move on to England-France then. Now, Scott, you were doing minute by minute on this broad range of opinion from listeners, people indeed posting into the Football Daily page of the Guardian website. Big Banana Feet says, England make Greece look like Barcelona. What horrible lack of ambition. And continues in that vein. John Reed questioned, did any of the panel fall asleep during the very dull England game? But other people were a bit more upbeat about Roy's boys' performance. What do you think?
Well, I mean, they weren't too bad at all, I didn't think. I mean, the one thing about this England side is that watching England for years and years now, it's never been quite clear what they've been trying to do, what they've been trying to achieve. They don't look very good, but it's clear what they're trying to do, and that's obviously just, you know, park the bus and, you know, hit people on the break. I mean, it kind of looked it was just a few minutes, but it kind of looked as though it might work because France, for the most part in the game, in fact, we're passing it around a lot and not really going anywhere with it. There's, so, you know, the poor man's Spain. Mm. Or Spain.
And the second half was a curious lack of ambition from both sides, as the game drew towards a close.
Yeah, I mean, the French seemed entirely happy with the point themselves, which was kind of a wee bit disappointing because I think if they'd have, like, you know, stepped up a wee bit, England were kind of there for the taking.
Yeah, it would certainly have been a more interesting match if both sides weren't happy to settle for the draw, because as France could certainly have increased the tempo. They could have made their substitutions earlier, taken off Malouda and put on Ben Arfa or any number of conjurers that they had on the bench. But they decided not to. And similarly, England could also have tried to attack that very fragile French defence more if they'd wanted to. So it would have been quite intriguing. But they didn't need to.
Ahmad Mohamed Umar says, and they said Gerrard had no positional sense. He's been fantastic.
Well, the one thing about Gerrard is that I think he gets a lot of flack for, you know, being some sort of hot-headed nutcase that runs about and just pings a ball everywhere. I think a lot of that comes from the fact that he's just, when he is in the middle, he's just simply not very good at passing. But most of his career, he's actually has been quite tactically disciplined, I think.
He played one brilliant pass in the match today, curling long range pass that got behind Evra to Ashley Young, it was who got it, and they could have done that much more if they'd gone for it. Evra is a weakness that can be exploited. They didn't get Young on the ball enough. I thought they should have played Oxlade-Chamberlain on that flank because his pace could have put Evra more in trouble. And similarly, if Milner had been on the other flank, he could have stopped Debussy's forward runs more.
All right, so England, not bad all in all. And France, a little bit of a disappointment.
No, I think France got what they came for. They were slightly disappointing as far as they could have perhaps tried to tear England apart more if they'd gone for it. I tell you, Franck Ribéry was disappointing. Mm. We mentioned Ibrahimovic not being a big game bottler. Ribéry, I think, could certainly be accused of being a big game bottler. I can't think off the top of my head of the last time he's really produced it in a big game.
Yeah, interesting point. Going back to the start, though, you're saying the French weren't really doing too much passing around. They did have numerous attempts, although the kind of two banks of four. It was working.
Actually, oddly enough, I thought the most potent French attacker was Debussy.
Yeah.
The right back was getting past Cole an awful lot, and if his delivery was a wee bit better, or if there were just more people piling into the box.
Right.
I thought it was great how that two banks of four became a sort of one bank of seven and a half when Nasri had his goal. There was basically just a line of them all across the middle of the penalty area, and Gerrard finally sort of flung himself forward to try and close down, but all a bit late in the day.
Good to see English banks resisting the Euro pressure in this case. There's that Euro gift keeps on giving, eh? Here's Stephen Farmer. He's optimistic. He says, I still believe I'll see John Terry lift the trophy on the 1st of July. Not necessarily for England, but I'm sure he'll be there, whoever wins. Nice one, Stephen. Right. Now, exciting enough, Barney Roney was there in the Donbar Stadium / Arena for the game, and he's now somewhere entirely more exciting sounding. Let's join him, Barney. Yay, where's the party at?
Well, currently the party is at my hotel.
Wow.
The media centre.
Wow.
Across the road.
Right.
Hotel, which is sort of part of the same complex as the stadium.
Is it? I thought everything was like a billion miles away from everything else, but not in Donetsk.
Well, everything is, except for my hotel and the stadium, which are almost conjoined.
Right.
It's alarmingly convenient.
It's collective thinking, Barney, that's what it is, and it's very much the future. Thanks so much for joining us there and taking time out for what sounds like a pretty wild time. Mind you, I imagine the whole day's been pretty wild there with the build-up to England-France at the Donbar Arena.
Yeah, it has. The city's been filling up this morning. There weren't many people around yesterday, but by the time, about lunchtime, the place was, it's a bizarre sight of English fans streaming past the big monolith of Lenin in the main square, and all the various kind of types with their inflatable Spitfires and their fish and chips and all that kind of stuff. They were there, but it's not your usual bunch. There's no cheap flights out here, so it's kind of your hardcore travelling fans. And very hot as well, you'll be glad to hear. So lots of fake sunburned drunken people by the time kickoff came.
Right. Yeah, it is hot out here, you're right. Now, the game tonight, Barney. What was the mood there among the fans who did manage to make it into the half-empty stadium? When they left, for example, what was the mood? Was it signs of a bright new beginning under Hodgson? How did they feel?
Well, it depends. If you start from the basic premise that England are crap, then that was a good result and a good performance. If your expectations are lowered and things have been forensically lowered by everybody, then that was fine. And it was a bad result for France. But let's face it, just taking that in isolation, it was a very poor game of football and had a very well-drilled defensive system. But England simply didn't have any attacks in the second half, and they looked very tired coming off. And there were a couple of players in the mix then afterwards. Julian Lescott and Scott Parker were there. They genuinely seemed quite pleased because England have got a point and they obviously had a game plan. But taking the bigger picture, it was a kind of it was the worst of a 1-1 draw, and I don't see any great hope for progressing very far in the tournament.
Barney, I mean, this is I'm trying to more get the picture here rather than the football, because as you say, it wasn't the most exciting game. What's the most entertaining novelty item or banner you've seen from the English fans so far? Because I've seen some good ones from the Irish fans, and I'm sort of hoping the English are going to raise their game in this situation.
It's the usual stuff. I mean, we get to this sort of pageant of ironized Englishness. There is nothing surprising or new, because the whole point is it's a load of hoary old stuff that you've seen before. I mean, there were the guys in Crusaders outfits who, they told me, have been in costume ever since they left Gatwick 36 hours earlier.
How did they get through security?
Well, it's not real chainmail, which I think is okay with the metal detector. But, you know, they're very peculiar characters.
Right.
It's more interesting with the Russian fans who were dancing around in a sort of parody of English football supporters, obviously drawn to what they imagine is our tourist culture. There were loads of them wearing George Crosses and stuff, and they were inside the stadium chanting Russia. That was the loudest chant of the night, was the chant for Russia.
Wow. No false nines, but false England fans. That's curious. One interesting thing that you were tweeting about, Barney, was a discovery you made in an England fanzine.
Yeah, this is Alan, isn't it? I am talking to Alan, aren't I?
Hey! Explain to the unhappy listeners who don't know what we're talking about yet.
Imagine my excitement this morning on picking up a copy of Free Lions, which is the official England supporters fanzine from the Football Supporters Federation, to find that there's a new feature in it called Who Said It? It's a new occasional feature. And it features this month Alan Partridge and James Richardson.
Yes.
Both of them obviously currently in the process of bouncing back. And it says, we've selected some quotes from two top TV football pundits. The Guardian's James Richardson, former presenter of Channel 4's Football Italia.
That's me.
Happy with that billing.
Yep.
And Alan Partridge, sports correspondent for whatever it is he did.
It's not me that got small. Yep, go on.
Well, listen, you're up there with Partridge. It's a bit of fun. Maybe I could test it on you. Maybe you could do the test.
All right, test it on Bandini, actually.
Okay. All right, the question is, who said, which of those two famous football personages said this? One, he can stick it in, thank you and good night. Partridge or Richardson?
Even James is shaking his head at the moment.
That's a Partridge.
I was going to say Partridge, yeah.
You're going Partridge?
Yes. Yeah.
That's correct, it is Partridge.
Yes.
Number two, like an Egyptian fish,
yes,
he's living in denial.
That's AC Jimbo.
You're going Richardson?
Yes.
You are correct.
Yes.
Okay. Three, the best header for America since Monica Lewinsky?
Oh, that's Jimbo, surely.
That's got to be Partridge.
Actually, I'm not so sure about that.
No, it's a Jimbo, that.
Yeah.
Several years too late, if I recall.
The proof is in the pudding, and in the pudding in this case is a football.
That's Partridge. I wish I'd come up with something as good as that.
The atmosphere hangs heavy, like a big smell, a smell of men together and cat's musk. That's probably Richard.
Yeah, Partridge. I'm going to go with Partridge on that, yeah.
So Partridge, you're correct. Okay, this is just great. I'm hoping that there's the right answer to this. Liverpool with a score straight out of Posh Spice's diary, 8-0.
I think that's Jimbo. It's the look on his face is telling me it's Jimbo.
It's an absolute jewel. I'm hoping it is. I mean, it is. You're correct.
Barney, that's terrific. Yeah. So that's three lions.
Yeah, and there's a nice big picture of you as well. And a nice big picture of your alter ego, Alan, as well.
Yeah.
So you're both in there.
A nice one. All right.
Yeah,
I'll get a copy of that for my Travelodge room. And
When is the I Jimbo tome coming out, James?
Well, that's a very good question, isn't it? Very good question. Listen, one other thing that producer Ben's particularly keen to find out. Have you met Alan Shearer?
Well, I saw Alan Shearer the other day. He was walking through the airport in Warsaw. It didn't really make much sense because the BBC aren't supposed to be here.
Did he have a broad grin at the time?
He had very spiffy luggage. He had a kind of tiered sort of staircase-handled thing with, I was saying at the time, it was the kind of luggage that Carmela Soprano would have.
Oh, okay.
Very spiffy, very shiny, very sort of tasteless. He was very proud of it. He was pushing in front of him.
Right.
And
he's
got
all his research notes.
Weirdly enough. I mean, maybe they were off on a weekend somewhere.
Right.
And I saw Stuart Pearce today as well. He was very sad. He was wandering through the main square beneath the statue of Lenin on his own in a pair of jeans without a map. We're heading off into the sort of wilderness of Donetsk.
Right.
It was very sad because he could have been up the road. You know,
he could have been wandering off into nothingness without a map as an England manager.
Yeah, with the England team behind him. But no, it was very sad. He should have refused to talk to anyone. He was pretty much lost in his own thoughts.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Barney Roney. Or indeed Roney. That's all the groups then. They've all played games, all these 16 teams. What lesson have we learned, Paolo? What's your big nugget that you've drawn from this opening 4 days?
You put me on the spot there. I don't know. I think it's been an entertaining tournament.
You're next.
I think it's been an entertaining tournament so far for the most part. So that's probably my big takeaway. I don't feel like, you know, I think a lot of people felt the last World Cup really didn't live up to what people had hoped for. And I think so far I've mostly entertaining games.
Scott?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that there's no one standout team is the thing. The sort of really big boys, Spain, Germany, Holland, have kind of all disappointed in their own way. But I think, I don't know, you still get that sense that maybe the winner is going to come from Group B. I think if Holland can get their act together, because oddly, even though they lost, they were. That's been one of the better performances, I think. So I'm kind of still expecting the winner to come from the group of death.
Paul? Yeah, it's been entertaining, as I said, in much the same way that Euro 2008 was entertaining. Mm. All the teams are fallible, but most of the teams are showing a pleasing ambition.
Is it just me that thinks that and then thinks, God, I really don't want a 24-team tournament, which we can have next time around?
Well,
that's true. There was one point I was talking a wee bit earlier with Paul, and there seems to be this sort of ongoing fallacy that the European Championships are harder to win than the World Cup, and that's just not true. Because there still are only two or three teams in this that you would expect to go on.
But you've seen Greece win this, you've seen Denmark win this, and that doesn't happen in the World Cup.
No.
Yeah. Also, probably when it went up from 4 to 8, and when it went up from 8 to 16, people went, oh, that's the tournament shot then. So, I don't know, you may be right, Paolo, but we must embrace change. Must embrace it. Tons says, if you are going to use that tannoy to play songs when the team score, could they at least use it to play the sad trombone, wah, 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 when they screw something up? It's a top idea, that, actually. Coffee is for closers. He's a bit upset about Ireland's performance on Sunday. Trapped only stuck in the 80s. We are stuck with this buffoon, says Coffee is for closers. And his Neanderthal tactics for another something... doomed to fail before he even begins qualification campaign. Paul, what was your reading of Ireland's game against Croatia?
I pretty much agree with that, actually. Yeah. Ireland have performed exactly the way I expected them to. And Trapattoni has said, or hinted, that he's going to change his approach for the next game, as indeed he hinted he would after they got a fluky 0-0 against Hungary in the last warm-up game. But he didn't do it then. I don't know what he has in mind this time. Maybe unleash Paul Green?
All right, then. Be a friend. Who are they playing next?
Spain.
There you go. There you go. Who's Paul Green, by the way?
Good question.
All right.
He's the man that Trapattoni picked ahead of people such as Wes Hoolihan.
Oh, yes. All right. The little fella.
That's the one.
Yeah. Good. All right. Tuesday brings us the Czechs against the Greeks. This is interesting. Czechs could be out. Well, they would be out. If they lose this one, they're out already. Crikey, it's a bit of a high-pressure game, isn't it? And the Greeks, once they woke up, very sluggish first, what was it, half hour or so, then they really got going. And if they start with Salpagidis, he must start this time, surely.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem, the issue for them is going to be, I was just thinking, it's going to be concern in defence again, isn't it? Which is, there's a team that's built itself on being solid. It only conceded 5 goals in qualifying. And now what, Papadopoulos is out for the rest of the tournament, and Papastopoulos is suspended for the next game. So you're missing your first choice at the back, aren't you? Which is a problem if that's your approach.
Mm.
But, I mean, the Czechs are, I guess, the weak team in that group, and they've got to attack them and look to win that game if they're going to get through the group.
OK. Well, of course, the Czechs might turn out it was just Russia was simply too strong. Maybe they'll be able to bounce back. We will be, though, getting Jonathan Wilson's views on these two teams after the game in tomorrow's Football Daily. Anyway, big game that, as I say, the Czechs on the verge of an early exit from Euro 2012. Meantime, across the way in Group A, it's Poland-Russia. Ooh, all sorts of build-up here, isn't it? Because it's Russia Day in Poland. Tell us more about this, Scott Murray. Only kidding. Paolo, you look like me, you know something about it.
Well, I mean, I know what the sort of widely reported stories have been in the last day, which is that apparently they're expecting up to sort of 5,000 Russia fans to march through Warsaw to the stadium, which is something that...
extraordinarily inappropriate.
Clearly isn't going to go down very well. There's been some small protests already in the last few days from Poland supporters because the Russia, well, obviously there's still lots of overhanging ill will to do with
the fact that they invaded and
lived. Well, there's that, but there's also more recently the plane crash which killed Kaczynski, and there's, you know, lots of theories about what caused that. And so there's been people outside the Russian team hotel with loudspeakers and placards. So there's already an air of tension. There was obviously also those problems during the Russia Czech Republic game, so there's lots which authorities are concerned about. Hopefully it doesn't come to anything, but there's a lot of tension, nothing to do with the football that's in the build-up to this game.
Paul, you're looking quite tense because Kurzakov, he's got it all to do now. You're backed in to be top scorer.
Yeah, I'm reliably, or maybe unreliably, informed by various Russian journalists of my acquaintance that Advocat will keep faith with him.
All right,
and Kurzakov will be unleashed again, and it'll be quite a feat if he misses as many chances as he did in the first match. And given that I expect Russia to create as many,
right,
I'm still confident of claiming my booty.
Right. Of course, the Poles did start the tournament off in quite some fashion. That first half against Greece, they looked like a rip-roaring ensemble, didn't they? Particularly with the Borussia Dortmund axis working to great effect. But then it all kind of trailed off. Do you think they can reignite that particular... The momentum of that opening 45 minutes?
It feels like that's the key word, doesn't it? I think if you went down the team and went one by one at the players, you'd go, well, Russia are stronger, and Russia seem to be in a good groove at the moment. Obviously, right before the tournament, they gave Italy a good seeing to, even if it was not necessarily Italy's best team. So you sort of feel like Poland need to be able to recreate that atmosphere they had coming out the gates against Greece and really get at them early on, because when Poland ran out of steam against Greece, even... actually, when they had the man advantage, it seemed like maybe there wasn't quite so much there.
Certainly not. Arshavin, was that a one-off? Was that a flash in the pan? Or is he going to be turning it on again this time?
Apparently, he's after a sluggish start following his return to Russia. Apparently, he's been in really good form towards the end of the Russian domestic season. So this is just a continuation of that. And he's in Russia, of course... A lot of their players are from Zenit, so they all are familiar with each other and they're used to the groove that they play at. So no reason for him not to do it again, except that he is notoriously inconsistent.
Well, that's true, of course. So
I was actually wondering, cheeky, I don't know, especially as, you know, as a known Arsenal backer, whether it, you know, Poland may turn out to have got something good out of Szczesny not being present, which is going to be controversial. But obviously the way he played in that first game was less than reassuring with the goal and the penalty. And a little stat that, I don't know, seemed salient to me, that he apparently had the fourth worst shots-to-save ratio of any keeper in the Premier League this season.
Really?
Now, I think that stuff's slightly overstated, and I think it's certainly true that at Arsenal, sometimes the shots that you're having against you are slightly different to maybe the ones that Manchester United are having against them, because it seems like a lot of the time at Arsenal, opposition strikers are shooting from 2 yards in front of goal after a defender's fallen over and custard pies show up in someone else's face. But it seems salient to me, because you can compare that with Hart and De Gea at Manchester City,
Manchester United, the top two
in shots to save in the league.
Interesting point. But he's not there anyway.
No.
So... let me finish off by just asking, after we've had a game from every team, we mentioned Arshavin, who has been, because I was noticed with interest, Peter Schmeichel was tweeting that Ibrahimovic has been the player of the tournament so far, which is, he's entitled to his opinion. He had a good game.
I think he tweeted that after about 20 minutes as well, to be fair.
Right, well, so far, the key words. Yeah, fair point. Who has been the player of the tournament so far for you? Who's been the player who's caught your eye the most? Paolo?
Blimey. The first name that's coming into my head is Di Natale, but that's entirely biased. That's just what I've enjoyed.
It was a great moment, wasn't it?
It was. Actually, I'll say on Di Natale very quickly, just because it came up in the last podcast, a lot of people talking about should he now be starting for Italy. That is slightly a fallacy, because Di Natale for Udinese at the moment he's been playing with a significant knee injury for years. And for Udinese, he basically doesn't train Monday to Thursday with just the team. He just spends all that time rehabbing his knee and then comes back into the team. So realistically, you can't put the guy in the starting lineup for every game. That's not going to work. So unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your viewpoint, likely Balotelli in the next game. Otherwise, I don't know, Jagoev maybe.
Jagoev, yeah.
Scott, anyone caught your fancy?
Well, I really enjoyed Debussy tonight.
Yes.
I thought it was fantastic.
All right then. Paul?
In a similar vein, I really like Maggio for Italy.
Yeah, it did you?
Tremendous.
I actually thought he didn't have that great a game, but... yeah, funny. I've seen him, you know, do better for Napoli.
Well,
but, yeah.
See, I haven't seen him that regularly.
Right. It's always encouraging to see somebody actually that far wide for playing for Italy. It's exciting. But that's Prendelli's way, isn't it, with Jack Marini on the other side? But anyway, there you go. Terrific.
Just another player that I think is probably worthy
Quickly,
of a
Scott.
Mention was Nelson Oliveira of Portugal.
Oh, yeah.
Who came on for about 15 minutes against Germany.
Right.
And, you know, Portugal famously being pretty light up front. He looks quite a prospect.
Mm. All right, then. He's got a foot like a traction engine, as Alan Partridge would say. And with that, that's it for today's Euro Daily. We'll be back with another Euro Daily tomorrow. But in the meantime, it's many thanks to Paul Dord, Scott Murray, to Paolo Mandini and producer Ben. And let me just mention, there will be a Euro paper review up on the Guardian website or on iTunes sometime on Tuesday. So, see you then, eh?
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.